and welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Weighed In podcast, coming to you on Monday morning, as always, with Kevin Blake, the saviour of horse racing already this week. And it's not even midday on Monday. And Brendan Duke, who's just the saviour of this show and beyond, really. So we have a top lineup here. God, I'm in good form. Kevin, let's check in with you first and foremost. This little stint on Sky News this morning, taking down the Animal Rising lies. Love it. We love to hear it.
Oh, it was good fun. And that was the fella I was debating, was the guy that ran across the track in the Derby. Incredible. But wow. Yeah, always good fun. Always good fun.
If you have missed this, you will not have missed it by the time you're listening to this, actually, because this clip is all over Twitter, or X, as it is known now. Kevin doing sterling work. He won't sort of blow his own trumpet, but he really is. So we thank you for that, Kev. We'll be discussing that more in this show. Brendan, how was your weekend? Weather kind of stopped play a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't a disaster for me, though, because I was on the Sligo-Roscommon border for most of the weekend, so I couldn't have gone to the Curragh anyway, and I did make it up to Leopards, and I missed the first couple of races, so I think I pretty much got everything taken care of.
Okay, wonderful to hear. Now, of course, it's Grand National Week, guys. Can't believe it. Feel like it's slightly crept up on us, but I'm very much here for it now. Obviously, 3 days of the Aintree Festival, and we will be bringing you guys Racing Only Better daily podcast to cover the 3 days racing up at Aintree. And of course, our Serial Winners Fund, Rachel Blackmore's Serial Winners Fund, will wrap up on National Day this coming Saturday, the 13th. Of April. You know the drill by now. This is a fund that's been building all the time. Every time Rachel Blackmore's had a winner, £5,000 has gone into the pot, and the fund is already at £205,000 currently, and hopefully it will build a little bit more before Saturday as well. So looking forward to seeing where that ends up. Looking forward to the action on the track this weekend. But let's jump straight into our review section, because it's all flat racing we're looking at. Obviously, as I mentioned, rain did stop play a little bit on both sides of the Irish. You'll kick off with some flat action over here at the weekend, including Blue Brendan Duke having a good time of it with a couple of nice horses at Kempton on the all weather. Let's start with Devoted Queen, who's been unchanged for the Guineas at 25-1. She's still very much sort of joining the dots together in her career, I'd say. The margin of victory isn't really a true reflection of her ability.
Yes, I'd say she is a talented filly. She's probably run to something in the 90s here, but given how keen she was early on, it was a good ride from Buick, I thought, in a five-runner field to get her some cover and teach her something. I would be surprised if they go for a Guineas off the back of that run. She clearly, as you say, has a lot to learn, and it's very hard to squeeze a run in between this and the Guineas. I suspect she won't turn up. She's well related. She's related to one ruler. No surprise with those connections. And I'd say she is a filly with a future if they can just nurture her. I wouldn't be pitching her into a Guineas at this stage.
And what would you say then, Brendan, about their colt that won Notable Speech? Again, he's much more of a kind of professional at this point in his career. Obviously that was a pretty good performance under that double penalty. He's beat previous winners in second and third. I mean, very different performance. Would you expect to see him in a Guineas?
Yes, I'd say this was decent form, and I'd give this a rating of something around 100. The Beckett horse in second seems to be well regarded. As you said, a real professional, probably wasn't best placed in the race, but Buick seemed to have a lot of confidence that he'd outspeed them. I mean, he's only run on the all weather, so you would have that question mark about him back on turf, but I certainly think he'd have the temperament to handle the demands of a Guineas. And I could see him running well in the Guineas. It wouldn't shock me if he was in the first four or five, but obviously he's a long way to go to get up to be talking about City.
Yeah, I think it's a real nice horse.
Yeah, no, I think
it's a real nice horse. Like he was up against a race fit fella that had won a listed race there the week before. Like he was ridden to learn and to be tested by Buick, like dropped him in, rode him for speed. Learned loads. Like they didn't go over quick here now, but like this horse is capable of like very, very fast section. I was like, I know your eye tells you he's clearly quickening well, but have a look at the TPD numbers as well. Like he's rattled, or the course tracker should say, he has rattled home. And look, while he hasn't run on turf, they don't want to run him on turf until he gets a bit quicker. So we'll see if it ever stops raining. I'm looking out the window in Golden. It is continuing to absolutely lash down. Hopefully, it does stop and we can see some proper flat racing, as they say, on nice ground. But I do like this horse. I think he's a really smart one.
Well, I mean, he's been cut from 66 to 1 for the guineas, the 2000 guineas, down to 33s, but obviously still a huge price. Is it a bit of a sleeper in the guineas market? Like, I know it's dominated obviously by City of Troy, but like, you know, something's got a pitch in there for these bigger guns.
I
could
could
see
see
him
it.
running
I can see
in the
it.
four or five. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I could see it.
Okay, very positive then about notable speech. Quick mention of Dare to Dream over in France, Kev, because she won over there at the weekend. She's been cut to 16 to 1 for the Oaks for the Gavin Hernon operation. She was group level as a 2-year-old, but she's come out and sort of stepped up and trip as a 3-year-old now, done it readily. She a genuine Oaks contender?
Oh, look, more to come, but look, it's bred the right way for it. Look, one last year, maybe just found the group company a little bit too much too soon. Like ran well, but just didn't drive on maybe as much as hoped. But the winter has been a help to her. Daughter of Camelot, out of a Goldaway mare. You'd only be expecting improvement with time and distance. And this was impressive. Look, the ground was soft as it is everywhere seemingly. Needs to drive on, but look, great to see Gavin Hernan with a very nice filly. If you're not familiar with Gavin Hernan, he's an Irishman. He's a son of Joe Hernan, a very prominent figure over in this neck of the woods, and he took a decision to go and train in France, and he's been doing very well. And this filly looks like she could be a real leader for him. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with her. One assumes, like you say, continue on towards the French Oaks, perhaps. And see where we go from there. But yeah, I'll be watching her closely. She's got a lot of promise.
A lot of promise. I'm very fond of the Camelots, one way or another. I want him to have a really, really good one. But yeah, following with interest, that's Dare to Dream over in France. Let's bounce over and give Leopardstown yesterday a bit of love, obviously on heavy ground and strange old day, really. And the results prove that in many ways, Brandon. But you were there. Should we kick off with Battle Cry, who won the Red Rocks Group 3 at a huge price, drifted price of 10 to 1? What happened there?
Well, I'm a bit conflicted on this. I mean, in many ways, as a strike for the integrity of the game, I love to see it. But as a paddock judge, I was humbled. He was walking around. He was staring in his coat. He was getting warm. He was on his toes. Ryan did a really good job of getting him settled, actually. And he was off the bridle plenty early. But there's nothing wrong with his resolution. I mean, he is the last horse you would have picked out of the paddock. Did it well. He's clearly a ground versatile horse. I don't know if Ballydoyle are even going to send more than one horse to Newmarket for the guineas. I suspect not, and if it is, it'll be a pacemaker. But yeah, this is a likable performance, and he has physical scope. This horse, he is a big unit. So a slightly baffling result from the paddock watcher's perspective.
Yeah, but not just that, Brendan. Like I thought it was a baffling result in a way watching it. Like it was a strange race to watch. Like the ground was particularly testing. It was very windy. And like it was a race where the contenders kind of moved around a lot within the race. Like Battle Cry, sorry, Samuel Colt was handy early, ended up dropping back at halfway. My Mate Alfie made a big mid-race move. Those that raced up there in the van the whole way have been, they're really well beaten. And it was a couple that ultimately came from off the pace to dominate it. It was a strange race. It's on my to-do list to hammer down the sections to try and get to the bottom of it. Because it looked a race that was run at a funny, uneven sort of rhythm that was, that a few paid a heavy price for being involved in the wrong part of the race. But yeah, it was interesting, if a little bit perplexing.
I think, yeah, there was a couple of results on the day that those comments would apply to, but maybe not so much, Kev, with a Lilac Roller for Paddy Toomey's yard. Again, we're talking third week on the bounce now. Paddy Toomey with a nice filly in a 3-year-old year, this time in the Priory Bell Stakes, the Group 3. And she, again, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm on repeat week on week with these Paddy Toomey fillies, but like, I was really taken with her.
Yeah, look, she's an unbeaten filly,
Yeah.
that beat Opera Singer. in her final start. Now, perhaps the best filly, 3-year-old filly in Ballydoyle. And yet she came in here kind of, you know, this was really competitive. Like it was whatever it was, 130 to field. And look, Paddy has his team in great shape, clearly. And she was ready to rumble. And like this was a proper battle with a big filly in Kitty Rose, who had changed hands ownership since we last saw her. And, you know, it was clearly well fancied too. And they really went at it from quite a way out. And it looked like Kitty Rose might be coming back. And a Lilac Roller stuck her head down and got the job done, in fairness to her. So look, on she marches. You know, Paddy was of a view that she'll drive on, improve fitness wise. And look at, we'll see where she ends up, whether it'll be the Irish Guineas, that's her entry at the minute, would need to be put in the English Guineas, but it'd be fascinating to see what they do now, because they're entitled to dream. She's unbeaten, she's already beaten the champion, and yeah, on she goes.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know, I feel like we're slightly sort of looking past her a little bit, underestimating her somewhat. Brendan, talk to me about the Ballysack Stakes, won by Dallas Star at 50-1, the rank outsider of a small field of five, and it won't be lost on anyone. Shamey Heffernan winning the race and beating a couple of O'Brien horses back in second and third, and it was a good day for Shamey, but I'm sure he had a small, tiny, inward, wry little smile.
Yes, whatever Shamey's smiling, it was another scale from the paddock judges, that Ocean of Dreams. He probably looked better than any horse on the day, dapples on his coat. I mean, he really looked in great shape before the race. A few quid in him, actually. He looked, he's a good looking horse anyway. Completely blew out Illinois, a laboured performance. Now,
he did come back lame, Brendan, which was almost nice because he's a horse I love as well.
Yeah.
And he did come back lame, so there was an excuse.
Okay, right. Well, that's something. We won't give up. We give up on him. So, and the winner. I mean, Shamey, slightly odd. What do you say after a horse wins a 50-1? He said, "Oh, he was always weak as a 2-year-old," which fair enough. He didn't make his debut till June, but I mean, he's running a Zetland Stakes, albeit a well contested Zetland Stakes. He's let go off 33-1. He's beaten out of sight. He's let go off 50-1 here. I wouldn't have any confidence in this form going for. I know it's easy to say when a horse wins a 50-1, it was a fluke, but I'm going to say that anyway.
This AMO group have no bit of nuance about them at all, Brendan. In different hands now, this horse would have been brought along nice and steadily and gone over to something like the King George the Fifth handicap at Royal Ascot and absolutely danced in off a marker 90. We'll have to say a little prayer for that handicap mark. It's gone now.
Team AMO, like,
they're flying, aren't they? In fairness,
all in over fairness the place. To them, like, I know there's a lot of kind of murmurings about who's actually training them. Obviously, Adrian Murray is the trainer. Robson are heavily involved, and we've talked about it before. There's a full team there behind the AMO colours. But fair cop to them, they're getting it right.
Hmm? Yeah, they're flying in fairness all over the place. And sure, look, we'll see which way the operation goes. We know it's an operation that kind of changes quite quickly. Historically, it has. But maybe they're settling down and are happy with a setup that is suiting them. So they're doing very well. And look, they're throwing off a lot of money into the game. And you like to see people that invest, you know, getting rewards. So I wouldn't have seen this one coming. I don't think many people would, but yeah, on they go. Interesting to see if he can back this up, because it was one of, not just because he was 50-1, but again, it looked a funny race to watch. Like the winner looked beaten turning in and managed to rally and win well. So slightly funny on a day where we're probably lucky to race, I'd say, between the ground and general conditions after losing the car the day before. Yeah. But yeah, we'll take most of the form we've seen, I'd say, with a little pinch of salt.
Are we taking the winner that made in the first race on the card for Edward O'Grady with a pinch of salt as well, Kev, or not so much?
No, I'd say this is a pretty smart horse. this was great to see Edward O'Grady. He wouldn't have, you know, loads of flat horses to run. Bought this horse at a sale in France for not a lot of money. He went to a sale, went to the Breeze Up in France, didn't sell. And I think he was bought privately after the horse was had actually come from Ireland to go to the Breeze Up in France. He's in the colours of Aidan Ryan now. And he was 100-1 overnight, Vanessa, but this wasn't a total surprise. Edward O'Grady said it himself afterwards, because Joseph O'Brien bought a lot of workers to Nace there recently, and Edward O'Grady asked if they could put this fella into the gallop with a bunch of similar horses to himself, including, ironically, the horse that ended up finishing runner up to him here. And he worked very, very well. He certainly won the gallop. So yeah, it wasn't a shock that a good bit of market support arrived for him. And in fairness to him, like he won like a good horse, was ridden to be educated by Jamie Heffernan, that man again, but ultimately won quite well. The runner-up is going to be a useful horse in his own right. The third was heavily backed on the day for Aidan O'Brien. So yeah, this is a pretty smart horse, I'd say, Vanessa, and looking forward to seeing what he can do next.
Your horse must be a bit of a looker, actually, the second. 235 grand for a farrer. He must be a fair good-looking horse, is he?
Yeah, Farr's a very good sire. He's sub-fertile, so we don't get to see loads of them. And he
Oh,
was
would that not be a lot of money for one of his progeny, no?
and well, he made a good few quid for at the yearling sales, 105, and then he went breezing, obviously. And sure, look, his breeze kind of ticked the boxes. And when the breeze ticks the boxes and they have the physical to match, they're going to make plenty. And he did make plenty. He's just taking a little bit of time, but he'll be grand. He'll be pretty crestfallen if he doesn't win his maiden next time, and can hopefully drive on from there. But he was beaten by a good one yesterday. So well done to all the O'Grady and Aidan Ryan team. That was impressive stuff.
Yeah, Farr is a great shame as a sire because, as you say, his actual numbers on what he's produced and like what ratings they get to is pretty good, but he just doesn't get them in fold, I don't think. I'm not even sure where he's at with that anyway.
Yeah, I think he
It's
gets like kind of 20-30 every year, something like that. I'm open to correction there, obviously, but off the top of my head, I think that's kind of where he is,
yeah.
which is a real pity because he's very, very capable. His numbers are excellent, like you say.
Brendan, anything else to report before we move on to news and views and chats from the week just gone? Anything else from the racetrack for us, Brendan? Or the paddock? Or the humbled by paddock?
You still wake up sometimes, don't you? You wake up in the dark and hear the screaming of the lambs. This is a new thing that I'm working on for this show, where you're going to do a Longfellow quote during the summer, and I'm going to do Hannibal Lecter impressions in honor of your lamb. So I'm just going to randomly throw in Hannibal Lecter impressions, and don't like this is just something I've always wanted to do. I always wanted to be paid to do Hannibal Lecter impressions. That sometimes I might be in passionate embrace with my missus, and I'll break off and I'll say, "Was it a butterfly?" And she doesn't find that arousing for some reason. I don't know why, but I mean that's women for you, crazy. So
You know what?
if I just randomly throw in a Hannibal Lecter quote, don't worry, it's all fun.
I'm glad you flagged that up to us. And as an FYI, if anybody did that to me whilst in a passionate embrace, they'd be asked to leave pretty swiftly. I'm not going to lie.
No,
I don't want to feel like I'm going to be murdered, just as a general rule.
some people find a bit of danger thrilling, Vanessa. It's horses and
Some people,
horses, you know.
anyway, it's actually not a podcast for this. As a little update, because there were some quite concerned people when I sort of announced rather haphazardly that I bought Lamb. So a little weekly update on Duck Duck the Lamb. She's going great guns. She's absolutely fine. Ironically, my lamb that I bought to make a jumper in the aim of sustainable fashion now wears a jumper herself. But other than that, it's all going really well. She's absolutely fine. So yeah,
If you
stay
and
tuned.
I can recommend, because you wouldn't like to do it, Vanessa. You'd never give such a vicious plug. If you follow Vanessa on Instagram, you'll see Duck Duck appear on her stories quite a bit, and it certainly gives little peaks to my day. I enjoy Duck Duck.
The lamb living her best life. So there you go. Right. On that note, let's move on. And as I say, let's tackle a couple of news topics from the week just gone. We will start, Kev. You obviously told us on the show last week that British Horse Racing, Great British Racing, and the Horse Welfare Board had come together to put together a website, basically a resource for all things horse racing stats and facts, essentially. You told us about this on the podcast last week, and then it was launched in the week just gone. And it's an excellent website, horsepower, well, horsepwr.co.uk. And on there, as they flagged up, it's a site that's designed to open the doors to the sport and talk about the thoroughbred, their purpose, the lives they lead, and the high welfare and safety standards that underpin British horse racing. But basically, on there, Kev, I was so impressed with this website. I know you told us about it, but like there's so much information on there. And I think crucially, it's so clear and simple. It's got everything you would need if you wanted to know the numbers behind the sport of horse racing.
Yeah, look, this is fantastic. It's gone down really well. And look, as well as the quality of the content, like I just think it looks really good, which is important. Like it's really well presented. They've chopped it up in a way that makes it easy for people to put these segments of information on social media, which is ultimately, 2024, this is where the battle is fought. And I think it looks really good. And like I said, last week, like do not think that this is it. This is a finished product. Like this is bare bone stuff. Like, look, I've been dealing with the team behind this for ages now. And like there's huge ambition for this to grow. And to get even more comprehensive, and to basically the aim is that anytime anyone has even a more a perverse type of a query about racing, that they'll be able to go on here and find an answer, like a really well constructed, vouched for answer with data backing it up, with maybe expert input to answer those questions. So keep your eye on this. It's going to get bigger and better. It's fantastic that the team involved got it out there in time for the Grand National. Like they've played a blinder. They've played a blinder, and it's like Gabby Whitten.
And on a shoestring, by all accounts, from everything I've heard and read.
Yeah, well, look, they had to keep it very tight. I thought Gabby Whitfield spoke brilliantly in the few places she spoke there in ITV and other outlets, represented the whole thing really, really well. And you'd be very proud of it, like as whether you're just as someone that's a part of the game, whatever part that is, or you're just an enthusiast. Like I think this is something we can be really proud of. It's something that we should all be directing to. And like I say, I can't wait to see what it looks like in 6 months. This is a great example of what can happen when people can get together, push in the same direction, and make something good happen. And look, it's just the starting point. We're going to hopefully get more of this cooperation on many different fronts and pull forward and improve this great game.
They must have got a rate, so to do it on a shoestring, because as you say, it looks very slick. I'm a person who's always impressed by shiny things. I mean, it really looks good. And I like that they're not on the defensive all the time either. That it celebrates the astonishing physical capabilities of the horses and how this is an outlet for them and the journey from a foal to a racehorse and all the hopes that are built up. I think it looks to be. I don't know how they did it on a shoestring though.
Yeah, fair play.
Well, I mean,
Look.
I just heard. I think it was Robin Mounsey was on. Nick Buck Daily, I think it was, and he was just saying basically. Like, imagine the number you'd need to design a website like that, half it and half it again, and you're probably still above what we. So I was, very much under the impression there wasn't necessarily a large budget for it, but they've obviously pulled together a good team. And as Kev says, like, it's the simplicity of it. It's just all there for you. It's like you don't have to go digging around for it, and it's not trying to be hidden underneath sort of waffle. The numbers are just there. The only thing I would say, and I don't know if, like, I don't know how, I suppose it's all algorithm based, is it's a little hard to find if you just type into Google what you want. You know how
No,
often.
yeah, it's probably a case of, and I know from dealing with something similar, it takes a little while for the search engine optimization to kick in. So it was only launched the other day and was only made live the other day. So I'd say if you try again in, I don't know, a week, you'll probably find it a lot easier to find it. Just I think that's the nature. It's a whole industry of itself, search engine optimization, and it takes a little bit of time.
That's why I presumed that that would be the case. And then obviously once you start typing in some keywords, I'm sure it will be at the top there. But that was my only, and it wasn't even a negative, it's just like a workable point that it was just relatively tricky to find. I ended up going over to Twitter to get the link to it. But
Jeez, I hope this working together thing catches on. Jeez, okay, we can do great things when we push in the same direction. Like you think back to COVID there, like when the muck really hit the fan and everyone started pushing together, and we got more kind of long-standing issues resolved in that testing space than we did in the previous 10 years and stuff like this. It would give you a bit of hope, Vanessa, a bit of hope and a bit of positivity for the great game going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that what last point, Kev? Sorry, when you're doing that Sky News debate, for example, today, is that a website that you're allowed to push people towards? Like, are you allowed to say on a debate like that, head over to?
And I was actually really annoyed at myself. That was my intent. That was my intention to do that. It wasn't my best performance now, but I was particularly annoyed that I didn't do that. You don't know how long these things are going to last, and sometimes you're kind of waiting for the right moment to shoehorn something in, and then before you know it, the thing's over. But anyway,
Yeah.
no, you are allowed to do it, and it's something that we should all be doing it. All should be doing as much as we can in the coming week when we get the usual criticisms on social media, etc. Now we know where to send people. The people that moan and comment won't always be for changing, but if we do catch some of those floating voters, send them here, and they'll find all the info they need.
Absolutely. Obviously, it was terrific news that we did hear in the week that Animal Rising Brendan won't be disrupting the Grand, that have no plans to disrupt the Grand National this time around, which of course would have been a big concern for trainers and jockeys as much as anything, and owners, you know, those connected to the horse, especially after the furore from last year. But alarming that their view on that, I mean, it's terrific news, but alarming that their view on that is because they think the battle is won.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to say that though, don't you? Is what I think happened was, and again, I might be a bit biased, was they sent their people on to these chat and discussion shows first, and this was in the pre-horse power era, and those Animal Rising representatives. Well, they were roundly defeated in the marketplace of ideas, weren't they? So they probably didn't want to send them out again to get another hiding. So we just say, oh, yeah, the battle is won. Okay, well, there's still going to be a massive crowd at the Grand National. It's still going to have a very prominent place on terrestrial television. So that's an interesting interpretation. But look, history is written by the winners. What are you going to do?
Yeah,
Actually,
they
look
do.
at like I think, in fairness, like there were so many consequences for those people that did take the action that they did at Aintree and then at Epsom. Like there was over 100 arrests at Aintree. You know, me man that I debated this morning that ran out on the track at Epsom, like he literally went to jail. He's a criminal conviction. And
Yeah.
I think people, most right-minded people would look at a scenario like this and say, yeah, like I kind of care about horse racing, don't really like it, but do I want to put myself at risk of arrest and a criminal record and everything else? And I think most reasonable people kind of go, I don't care that much. No thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'd say I wouldn't be surprised that their funding isn't in great shape either. And you need moolah to finance these things. And
Okay.
look, on we go.
Let's move on. A couple of other news topics from the last 7 days. Aidan Coleman, Brendan, announced his retirement on Luck on Sunday. Obviously, many people have seen this by now, but essentially, he lost his battle with the recovery from a leg injury and a knee injury after a fall at Worcester last summer. The details of the injury and then the night after in the hospital are literally horrendous. And so your heart goes out to Aidan because it kind of feels like obviously he had some real high points in the saddle. He's got a clutch of Grade One winners to his name, festival successes and the likes, and really good relationships with trainers. But that recent hookup with John Bonn, and then as a result, obviously Nicky Henderson, they just had the hope of taking him to another level in his career, kind of for maybe the latter part of his 30s. So it just feels like he's being cut short unfairly. And he's such a nice lad. I mean, I just feel sorry for him, actually.
I mean that story checks out. I've never, as you say, he seems to be very good in terms of the people who want to work with him or what have you. And significantly, of course, he had a retainer for one of the most loyal men in racing. So you would hope that that would be useful to him in his post-riding career. He did say that he'd no idea what he was going to do because, of course, he hadn't planned for something like this to happen, but. Having JP in your corner is probably no harm. I feel like it'll be okay for him. But I mean, it's a cruel thing. I mean, it's a desperate thing for a sportsman to have to retire at any time, but to have it forced upon you is particularly cruel. But again, whenever we talk about these things, I end up with the saying that it's a tough business. Sports a tough business. My heart goes out to him, but it won't stop me watching sports.
No. I not what would stop you watching sports, Brendan? Not much in life, surely.
No, nothing. I mean,
The missus. If
they,
you met, if you
no.
fell madly in love with somebody, and they said, "My one caveat to spend the rest of my life with you, Brendan Duke, is that I don't want you to be involved in sports and gambling anymore," what would you say?
Well, I'd say that that's a completely unreasonable position, and that I'm so lucky to live in an area, an era, should I say, of organized professional sports, and I love organized professional sports more than you.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't reply with like some Hannibal Lecter comment quote again. Right, onwards we go. Kev, back over to you because Kimmage is back. Paul Kimmage has had another article in the Irish Independent with it's a doping related investigation story. I'm not gonna lie, I know you sent it on, but it was really long and you sent it on late and I lost the will to live halfway through. So you're gonna have to flesh this out, but in a non-biased way and in bullet point form, because we don't want to be hanging around on this guy.
No, we won't hang around too much. A story about a vet who there was a seizure of some unauthorized medications going back a few years. It twisted and turned a little bit. We didn't really end up anywhere. The bit that made me chuckle was there's a line in it, and I'll read you about it because this is a vet that, as far as I'm aware, deals primarily with sport horses and Arabians and things like that. But in an effort to link this to racing, he has used a picture that was on a website, which I went on to for a company that this vet owns called Equine Tendon, that has treatments for horses that damage tendons. And there's a picture of Justify on there, seemingly winning the Preakness Stakes to complete the American Triple Crown. And to quote from Kimmage's piece, that piece also carries a photo of a winning horse and trainer. The horse is Preakness, the 13th winner of the American Triple Crown, who would later test positive for an illegal substance.
Oh,
Oh,
Jesus Christ,
Jesus
isn't it? It's a
Christ.
low level, isn't it?
Yeah, and it just kind of sums up a lot of Kimmage's work on racing, doesn't it? How he wrote that and how it got past the sub-editors is quite sensational. But of course, if you don't know the punchline, the race that Justify won was the Preakness. The horse's name was not Preakness. I
But I
just
mean
really
that's that. This is exactly what he
that's.
does. That not to go on again, and very very briefly, but he just gets these threads and he tries to weave them into some coherent quilt. And he's talking about a yard in Tipperary. I don't even know what that means. And then he's talking about the guy mentioning in trade journals the vet, the Dutch vet, promoting himself. But what else are you going to do in a trade journal? And then he finishes up when he's up before a trade body to try and preserve his license to practice. So he's instead of going in there and saying, well, actually, I meant to tell if the bag had been delivered on time, I would have got the medications to customs, but you know how difficult it is to deal with airport people when you lose luggage. Instead of that, he's gone into the trade body and said, right, hands up, I made a mistake. Lessons will be learned, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. There's no point in going in there and still plead your innocence. Just go in and lay yourself before them and say, please give me a second chance. And I'll be shocked if he loses his license to practice veterinary medicine.
And look, some context here in like an Irish veterinary respect is needed, because like these cases do pop up about vets being found with, inverted commas, unauthorized medications, and it sounds very ropey, etc. But more often than not, it isn't, because you need to be aware that Ireland like has some of the strictest medication rules. Nothing to do with horse racing in general, in the world, because the Department of Agriculture have set it up that way. With the aim of protecting our supply of the food chain. And it's a real problem for equine vets. I know we bump into it all the time with simple stuff, with mares and foals and things like that, is the vet, if something goes wrong with a horse and it needs to be treated, the vet will know exactly what that horse needs. But it could be as simple as a form of antibiotics or a certain type of other therapeutic medication. And they're just not licensed in Ireland. They're not authorized in Ireland. It's a very narrow spectrum of things that vets are allowed to use in Ireland. And like the difference between Ireland and the UK in that regard, like it's night and day. The situation is way more permissive, isn't even the word, because it's not that Britain is permissive, it's that Ireland is just really, really strict. And it puts
Right.
vets in a really difficult position because they might know exactly what the horse needs for the care of the horse, but they can't use it. And some,
Right.
I'm not saying it's right, but some will skirt around those and bring medications in solely with the view to better treating the horse and giving it the best possible care. And I know it's a big source of frustration in the veterinary world. And you just need to be aware of that context sometimes when these, and I'm not saying it's applicable to these cases, but to this specific case, but it often will be on this type of case. So I think that's important context.
Okay, well, let's move on then, because a story, well, today, Monday, the Jockey Club are announcing a prize money cut, a cut to prize money for the remainder of 2024 due to the economic climate they find themselves in. They've released a press release on this on Monday morning, and just for numbers' sake, bear with me, but in January of this year, the Jockey Club disclosed that the overall prize money for the 334 fixtures scheduled across our 15 racecourses was budgeted at 60.1 million for 2024. It is unfortunately necessary for us to reduce our executive contribution between May and the end of 2024 by a figure in the region of 750,000, which amounts to 2.3% of the amount we plan to invest from our own funds, resulting in the total now being more in line with the 31.1 million executive contribution of 2023. Last point to just pull out of that press release. At the beginning of every year, we announce how much we have budgeted for in terms of prize money, both our executive contributions, the amount we put in from our own overall prize money total. However, this figure is contingent upon business performance and undergoes a consistent review. So, Brendan, the number is quite small. But the fact they've announced this for the rest of 2024, not long after the original 2024 prize money announcement, is the bit for me that I find a little bit alarming. Like it's quite a short amount of time to make quite a quick change.
Yes, well, they probably did get a little bit of a shock with the attendance figures at Cheltenham, and I suppose there isn't ongoing cost of living crisis, but yes, I take your point. It's not a whole lot, but then people aren't the relevant factions in racing aren't going to have a lot of confidence in their next announcement about prize money if they can just roll back on it a couple of months later. I do take I do take that point. I feel like they're trying to do their best at the same time, and that they are trying to keep prize money as high as they possibly can, but they may have overextended themselves in this case. Yeah, we'll have to see what happens next year, but I suppose your concerns are pretty legitimate.
Yeah, Kev, do you think this is a sign of things to come even in the shorter term? Do you think more changes might be made if the attendance figures aren't what they'd hoped and planned for? Like, could we see another announcement in another 5 months saying, sorry, we're going to have to buckle down even further?
I really don't know. I certainly hope not. Look, prize money is going to be a fair old battlefield at the minute, and it's been interesting to note in the last week or so, a few prominent Irish trainers have come out and made some quite strong statements about prize money in Irish racing and comparing it to British racing. Johnny Murtagh, Aidan McGuinness, and Joseph O'Brien also commented on it with the TDN. And I would look at these things probably closer than most because I'm looking at the race programs for Ireland and England every day and comparing and looking for, comparative opportunities in that. And if you ask a racing man in the street who's got better prize money and the UK or Ireland, they'd all say Ireland, of course. But I tell you what, look a bit closer. And things have changed in the last couple of years. Prize money dipped during COVID in Ireland. It hasn't necessarily bounced back as well as you'd like. And premierisation is getting a bit of a rough time of it in the UK in the press. But you look at those premier fixtures, you look at the prize money, look at how it compares to similar races in Ireland. And Britain's winning at the minute. And I tell you, there was an awful lot of Irish horses running on All Weather Finals Day in the UK, I think 23 or something individual runners. And there's got to be more. I know Joseph O'Brien is certainly going to be sending a lot of horses to the UK on Saturdays there to try and win some of that money because it compares very well. We had an interesting situation a few weeks ago in Ireland that would have slipped under most people's radars, where the Curragh took it upon themselves to raise their minimum prize money levels to 20 grand per race for all races, and I really caught people unawares, and Leopardstown have had to upwardly adjust their prize money to try and keep up some bit. But I tell you, it's telling and it matters. I have a horse there at the minute. He was declared to run at the Curragh last Saturday in a 0-80. He's a maiden, and the decision was made to run him in the 0-80 handicap with a race value of 20 grand rather than run in a maiden at Bellistown next Saturday with a race value of 11.5. As it turns out, the car has been called off, and he might have to run a Bellistown anyway. But you know, these are factors that influence decisions. And that handicap had, I think, 17 or 18 declarations. Fabulous prize money. So these things matter. People looking on as observers maybe underestimate how much it matters and how much of a factor it is in decisions, especially when you're down in those mid ranges, middle part of the sport. It matters, so people need to be sharp.
I think it's like when you look at like a bigger operation, like let's use Joseph just as an example because you're heavily involved in it, but also we have a relatively recent example with Saturday's filly winning over here, Kev. But like, it's easy to look at those big operations and say, surely they don't, you know, really want it. Like, do they really look at the prize money in the sense of what's the difference between 5 grand running in Ireland or a little bit extra running over in England or whatever? But actually, it's not a small difference. Like that Andalese filly, what did she win when she came over here at the weekend for a listed race?
It was something nearly 35 sterling.
That's a fair whack.
Yeah, you'd be talking like kind of 15-20%. And look, it's not with a filly, it's not going to be the ultimate consideration, but you do certainly look at it. You know, if you're talking black type, that's a slightly different conversation. You might be willing to run for less money if there's a better black type opportunity. But in general, with horses, especially those kind of rated 90 to 100, who can be challenging to earn with, you know, it's a trainer's job to try and maximize the horse in terms of wins and prize money gained. And like, you have to look at prize money, and you're constantly looking for opportunities anywhere where the horse might be able to run for prize money levels that they wouldn't do at home. So it is a massive consideration. And I tell you, you wait and see. You watch how many Irish horses run in the UK in the next few months and what compared to last year, and I guarantee you it'll be significantly up, because this isn't a secret, and there will be plenty of people thinking the same way.
Well, that's sad news for you, Brendan, because less paddock watching for your Irish horses when they're running over here. That'll be disappointing for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just basically the Watergate scandal. Just follow the money. It's always in everything. Just follow the money. I knew this was coming when we talked about this. I think it was specifically around the time of the Adonis Hurdle. And I just looked at it. It was literally 50,000 sterling to the winner of the Adonis Hurdle. You just think, why aren't all the Irish trainers sending horses? It might just take, it might be a little bit of a lag phase, but soon enough, they're going to realize there's gold in them there hills. And good for the UK paddock watchers.
Yeah, and it's the Irish, like the HRI, are going to need to get on this and get on to the government and say, here, lads, we need to stay competitive here. Like, yeah. This is the thing, you know, this the whole argument for prize money. The flat racing in particular is very international. And if you're not being competitive on prize money, you're not only are Irish trained horses going to go around in England, you know, if you're an owner and your trainer is telling you, let's go to England this Saturday, let's go to England next Saturday, all of a sudden the little monkeys in the head are going to start moving and they're going to say, well, why don't I just have my horse and training in the UK? You know, that's the danger. So, like, Irish racing needs to be on. Well, we're talking flat racing primarily, Vanessa. But like, we need to be on this as the Irish racing industry. They really can't let this lie. This is a serious issue, and it's been flagged now before the gap gets any bigger. So they need, and I know they are thinking about it, but they need to think about it more and get some stuff done. You know.
Well, hopefully those little monkeys will start wearing away quite soon then. Right. And to finish up, obviously, we have to give the time to Stefano Kirky, who the news came through the early part of last week that Stefano, who had ridden plenty of winners over here in the UK, had died after being injured in a fall in Australia last month. It was announced midweek. He was only 23. And look, it goes without saying, like, nothing we're going to say on here is going to make a jot of difference to the grief that Stefano's family and friends will be enduring at this time. But all we can stay real is that we're very much thinking of them at this incredibly sad time. I think like everybody watching and listening to this will have seen the outpouring of love and affection on social media that followed the news filtering through from Australia. And so much of it came from those who really seemed to know him. And they really brought to the fore kind of what a really fun and intelligent young man Stefano was. And I suppose he came across that way in interviews we had done with him on Sky Sports Racing over the last few years. He was just such a likable, kind, funny guy. And then hearing all that about what he was like in person was sort of in equal parts wonderful, but also heartbreaking. Like, how can it be so cruel that he's been taken so young after what was such a freak incident? It's just incredibly sad. If you haven't read it already, do go and read Callum Shepherd's wonderful tribute to his friend. It's on social media. It really went viral and it deserved to do so because it was very touching and it was very fitting from clearly someone who adored Stefano himself, just as a friend as much as anything. So I'm not sure there's much more any of us can add to that, really. It's just incredibly sad. And as I said at the start, our thoughts are very much with his family predominantly and his friends who are clearly going through a grieving process. For someone who, Kev, if you want to add in, was clearly just a pretty all-round wonderful guy.
Yeah, look, I don't have words to add. It's just so sad. You know, young man goes out doing the thing he loves. We know it's a very dangerous game any day of the week. And you know, unfortunately, we do lose participants, you know, geez, God, so regularly all over the world, you know, it's incredibly sad when it happens. And you just feel for everyone that knew him and everyone involved with him, you know, for his family. God, you know, it's tough stuff. And, you know, we shouldn't underestimate the risk levels, you know, because of where we are and what we do. We put a lot of focus on risk when it comes to the horses, but the risk to our human participants is ever present. And when something like this happens, it just hammers it home. And yeah, like I say, I don't have words to add to this. So yeah, commiserations to all involved. It's just really, really sad.
It is indeed. On that note, we will wrap the show. Kev, as always, thank you very much. Brendan, same to you. Enjoy Aintree Week, everyone out there. We will be having those daily Racing Only Better shows for you. We'll be covering each and every day of Aintree's Grand National Meeting. We will kick off with a recording on Tuesday, looking ahead to Thursday. Onwards that will go. Very much looking forward to that. Hopefully finding you a winner or two, especially of the big one, Grand National Week. Very much looking forward to it. But for now, thank you very much for watching and listening. Join us for those daily shows. But that was Wade In.